Hello, everyone, and welcome back to your favorite podcast with your three favorite geniuses giving our not-so-genius takes on all things TCU football and other interesting things around the country. For the first time in what feels like forever, we had a game where not only did the Frogs win and the three of us were willing to discuss on air without feeling genuine suffering, but also it was an interesting game, so there's lots to talk about. It was a boring garbage game, but it was an interesting boring garbage game. So with that, where do y'all want to start? There's plenty to address here.
Well, I think the overarching theme is the defense played incredibly all game.
Yeah.
And this morning, I did not watch it live because it started at 3:30 for me. But I woke up early. I had my phone on Do Not Disturb. I got on ESPN by closing one eye and blocking out the screen with my hand so I didn't accidentally see the score line.
Hero.
And was able to type in TCU and pull up the replay. And I live tweeted me watching it after everybody else had watched it.
That's actually amazing.
So like if you were awake at 4:30 a.m. y'all's time, or I guess it would have been closer to 2:30. You could have gone on Twitter and seen my reaction.
I was awake at 2:30 a.m. my time. That's when the game ended.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, well, that's when I went to bed last night with my glorious 13-7 one touchdown victory.
Yes, sir. But
so I have a question about that.
Yeah.
Did the defense play great? Or did we play Zach Wilson's little brother who doesn't know how to play football yet?
Yes.
Because I know both those. But you are saying it is both of them. Like, if that had been a good quarterback, you think our defense still maybe not shows up as well, but like our defense was playing well, not just getting lucky against the nobody?
They would have scored more than 7 points.
That's fair.
But the penetration that the defensive line was getting was legit. And Utah's offensive line is really good. And I will say a couple of their sacks, we got to them quickly. But yeah, the other sacks were coverage sacks.
And, yeah, that's fair.
And that means that the defensive backs were doing their job. The defense in particular, I want to give a shout out to Devin Deal. He played maybe the best game of his career. I didn't watch any of his Tulsa or Tulane, whichever Tulane. One he went to. Tulane. I didn't watch any of its Tulane tape, but he was absolutely out of his mind this game.
He really was. All over the field. Well, and the other thing I'll say is I felt comfortable asking the team to get a tackle for loss. And when I asked, they did not always give it to me. But they didn't never give it to me. Like, we could show up and play the freaking game. Like, we were – our defense was aggressive, and it did do the things.
At the end of the first half, I was scared because Utah's offense had done absolutely nothing in the entire first half. And I've played enough NCAA college football 25 to know that if you give the other team the ball with under 2 minutes remaining in the half, they're going to score. And
I want to talk about that last bit of the half when we didn't go for it or whatever. I can't remember exactly what happened because I was delusional and I was very embarrassed by how soft we ended the half.
I was okay with it strictly because our defense had been playing so well.
I guess that's fine, but I felt like I was watching 2018 Gary Patterson. Like, we weren't literally doing the things where we try and save timeouts for the second half the way Gary would, but we may as well have been. Like, I felt like we were just done with that half, and that embarrassed me. I felt very soft and very disappointed.
Well, and I think, like, as a whole on this game, right, we only scored 13 points. Like, but the offense moved the ball pretty well
in the first half.
In the first half, at least, yeah. Second half was a bit of a different story. I thought Hoover did a good job of spreading the ball around. It wasn't just the Hoover and Jack Besh show, which was a nice change of pace to see. Going off of that, Eric McAllister is going to be incredibly good for TCU for the next couple of years.
I would say he's still young, but he's a stud.
Yeah, I think he has one more year.
Well, and we can't not mention the best running back on our team, Savion Williams.
Yeah, that was the best play of the night for us, was Savion direct snap.
You know what the best part was? We did it like 8 times, and every time we were like, this is what we're going to do. He's 8 feet tall. Stop him. You know what we're going to do. And it actually worked.
Well, the thing about him and Trent Battle is...
Trent Battle looked great.
He played extremely well. But the thing about both of them is they didn't wait for a hole to stay open. They saw the hole and they hit the hole. Yes. And that's where Cam Cook has struggled this season, is he has the hole, whether it's been there or not, and oftentimes with our offensive line, frankly, it's not been there. But if there has been a hole, he has just had half a second of hesitation before hitting it, and that half a second causes the hole to close. But with Trent and Savion, they just hit the hole, and a perfect example of this is that the final drive of the game, 4th and 1. We did the wild frog to Savion, and he just went straight forward. He said, I don't care who's in front of me. I'm going straight forward. It reminded me of wild frog with Shewo.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking of.
Which, like, he can do that because he's 6'5 and 200-something pounds. Well, he's going to be hard to bring down.
When a 6'5, 225-pound hits the hole without hesitating, it hurts.
Yeah. 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 No one's going to want to tackle a guy that big. I thought, like you said, Jacob, Trent Battle was hands down our best running back. Mm-hmm. Not considering Savion Williams a running back at this point.
I was like, I believe he has less yards than our other running back.
But I would totally go off of that point. He just runs north and south. He doesn't dance around in the backfield. And that was one of my qualms with Cam Cook throughout this season, is Cam Cook is shifty, but he doesn't follow blocks. He doesn't stay behind his guys. He doesn't go burst through a hole. He bounces it outside. And as an offensive lineman's trying to block for him, that's really hard to keep your guy in front of you if the guy is constantly not following the block. And I thought Trent Battle did a much better job than Cam Cook. Granted, like, small sample size, but he did a much better job of just hitting the hole that he's supposed to hit. And it turned into he averaged 5 yards a carry.
Yeah.
And you know what? You're right that it's a small sample size, but of the sample size we've got, I don't think there's any question about that. I think 100% Battle looked great.
Yep.
This was the first time I felt good when we ran a ball.
Yeah. And it's the first time that the offensive line actually created consistent holes as well.
Mm-hmm.
We do have to say that. Like, it's not all on Cam Cook. The offensive line in the run game has been terrible.
I think Sonny might actually have been right when he said we looked good at practice. I think they actually fixed some flaws. Now, Utah is a kind of mid-team, so I don't know if these errors will remain fixed. But a lot of our complaints were answered in that game.
Well, I mean, Utah has the second best defense in the Big 12.
Well, that's the thing. The fact that they're losing because they've lost Cam Rising for the 87th time, so as a result, they can't put up points, doesn't change the fact that all the rest of their team is still alive the way they were expected to be.
Yeah. Yeah. This is what the game against Houston should have looked like from our perspective on defense.
Yes.
That's what we should have scored more, and we did score more against Houston, and we should have scored more in this game.
Yes.
But this is what our defensive game plan from here on out, because frankly, we don't have a strong strength of schedule from here on out. The teams that we have are not that good. So we need to come out with this intensity. I when we got our first sack of the night, I was like, whoa, we got a sack. It seemed like that was our first sack since Stanford when we had four or five and everybody
We got a sack against Long Island.
Oh, yeah, we had one sack against Long Island. But, like, we came out with Stanford and had a bunch of pressure, got pressure on the quarterback, had a bunch of tackles for loss. I think we had 10 tackles for loss and five sacks against Stanford or something like that. And then against Long Island had one sack and three tackles for loss. And everybody was really excited about Andy Avalos and his defense coming in because it was such a transition from what we'd seen previously with Joe Gillespie, especially in 2023. And we then proceeded to have the Joe Gillespie defense for five games straight.
Well, and it was even, you said it, I think on the last episode we recorded, you literally said on air, I want to know who was calling the Stanford game and what changed, because we all felt it. And last night, it changed back. Like, it looked like the Stanford attack again.
Mm-hmm. And with our defensive backfield being CJ Caesar reincarnate in Jatravis Broughton, and then LaMarion James and Channing Canada, and basically it's just those three because of injuries, we have to get pressure on the quarterback because, frankly, they're fine players minus Jatravis Broughton.
And but, you know what? Broughton might deserve this week's Golden Player Award because he made it a whole game without punching a baby, which by his standards. At no point, they said Broughton's name in like the third quarter, and I was like, wow, I haven't heard about him. And I was like, wow, I haven't heard about him.
And they said his name in the third quarter because he was the one who got beat on their 72-yard touchdown. And that was the first time they said his name.
Well, I did eventually hear about him.
But, yeah, you have to get pressure on the quarterback because our defensive backfield cannot withstand giving somebody 8-9 seconds to throw consistently. We can't do that.
Well, it showed because the one time we weren't able to stop it, Broughton got beaten for a seven, like you just said, for a 70-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, as a whole, I would say our defense, like the corners outside of Broughton played well, right?
I agree.
And that's honestly all we can really ask for at this point.
Yeah. LaMarion James, I thought, had a fantastic game. He played really, really well. And, yeah, I mean, every year, what do we say? In the Big 12, if you can give up one explosive play per game, you're probably going to win the game.
Yeah.
Every year. Because the Big 12 is an offensive conference. If you can give up one explosive play per game, then you have a really good chance of winning the game. And we gave up one explosive play, and that was it.
Now, I will also say – Jamel Johnson, again, has continued to solidify himself as the best player on our defense, and it's not particularly close.
Yeah.
We have two very serviceable safeties.
Everybody gives Hodges credit for hurting Cam Rising last week before the game.
Yeah. I mean, and I thought Bud Clark finally had a pretty good game. He did have an interception, which is great for him. It probably would have benefited us even more if he didn't have the interception.
It was an interception where all of us said, oh, don't catch that.
Yeah, but like if you're on the field and the ball is coming to you like that.
And look, here's the thing. I'd rather him have his instincts on to catch that ball than he dropped the next one that we needed him to catch.
Yeah. And quite frankly, he caught it and the offensive player didn't. So, it was basically a punt. But in the end, we won the game. Who cares?
So, the one thing that I will say that I hope changes moving forward, I like Caleb Fox, but like Marcus Steele needs to be the starter and the center.
Oh, absolutely. Especially, here's the thing. You know what? Even if he doesn't ultimately remain the starter, his performance this week should be rewarded. He should start against Texas Tech because he clearly showed that he can do it. And if you want to put the other guy back in, at least let this put some light the flame underneath him, because Deal earned a starting job this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who was, his final two schools were us and Georgia. Like, he could be playing SEC ball right now, and he chose us over Georgia. And, like, the potential was there. It's just waiting to come out. And I think he benefited from Avalos, like, calling a more aggressive offense. He's not a run stuffer like Dominic Williams is. He isn't. He's a guy who gets after the quarterback. We don't have a run stuffer on this team. We need to get after the quarterback and rely on people hitting their gaps.
Yeah, I mean, losing Dom Williams this year absolutely destroyed this defense. And
yeah,
I bet he's not really happy about being over it.
Bingo cards, and it needs to include Barrett mentioning losing Dom Williams. I don't think we had an episode without hitting that one.
It's a fact, though. I mean,
no, it is.
And I bet he's probably not super happy about being on a terrible Oklahoma team right now.
He's making a whole lot more money than he would.
Yeah, but he's making a lot of money, so props to him. Like, go get that bag.
But last night, he officially got a transitive loss to Vanderbilt.
Yes. All this to be said, though, like, we've been missing having a disruptor in the middle of the defense, and Marcus Deal gives us exactly that.
Yeah.
And the things that that opens up for the linebackers to be able to shoot gaps, because they're not having to take a lineman one-on-one, and because Marcus Deal is eating up two blocks at once, changes this defense to where our guys can trigger and actually get tackles for loss in the backfield rather than getting pushed two more yards down the field because they've got a guard who's 6'4", 310 pounds pushing them away.
Yeah. I mean, he was incredible. Our whole defense just played out of their minds yesterday. I when we got the first sack, I was surprised. And then we got a second sack, and I was like, wait, what is going on right now? And then we just kept on racking up sacks.
And almost every drive, we got some degree of negative yards at some point. Like, we pushed them back a little bit at least once a drive.
They had like 80 yards.
It wasn't always enough, but it always was there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when you hold a team to under 100 yards and a half, that's good defense.
Yeah. Well, we've given almost 20 minutes to our good defense. Do we want to address the other side of the ball? Because we normally are saying, gosh, I hate Kendall Briles, but credit where credit is due. 38 points is enough. We should have gotten the blah, blah, blah. And we have to explain that the defense threw it away. This time, the defense held the game, but the offense did not put up enough. With that offensive performance, we should have lost, and thank God our defense put the team on their back and kept Utah from scoring.
Yeah.
Savion, like we've already touched on with his wild frog, was incredible and a beauty to watch.
Yep.
But otherwise, there were a lot of concerns. We, like you all said, we moved the ball a lot in the first half, but we didn't do anything with it. We finished the game with one touchdown. And I've been saying, at least in our group chat, that Josh Hoover is good for two interceptions a game. He didn't get them last night, but he should have. There were two different times he hit a defender in the numbers, and the Utah guy just dropped it.
Yeah, I will say this was definitely Hoover's worst game of the season, in my opinion. Even the plays that he made, he didn't make. It was the receiver. It was, quite frankly, it was JPR laying out for passes and making incredible catches. And it was a lot of run after the catch. We didn't take too many deep shots this game. We took one to Besh when we were on like the 4 yard line or something like that. And it was a 30 yard play. And that was a phenomenal pass. I will say that was, he laid it right over the defender's shoulder to where Besh could catch it. But other than that, JPR had a great game, I thought. he was the possession guy. He caught the ball when it was thrown to him, no matter where it was thrown around him. And we had like a 3rd and 8 on the first drive of the game where I was like, well, I guess we're punting. And Hoover made a pretty poor throw. And JPR like laid out and made the catch for a first down. And he did that, I think, on 2 other third down occasions as well. But yeah, I wasn't terribly impressed with Hoover this game. He didn't take chances as many chances. Like the throws that hit the defenders and the numbers, they were just bad throws. They weren't bad decisions.
Yeah.
And I think that was a sign of improvement. He was more willing to take the check down. But yeah, he wasn't great.
My big concern, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I kind of feel like this is the third time in a row, this season, the third week in a row, not counting the bye week, that this has been Hoover's worst game yet. And if he can put it together, great, but I'm very worried that he's just kind of declining. I know Barrett's the world's biggest Hoover defender.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that this was Hoover's worst game. That being said, to play devil's advocate here, not just because I'm a Hoover fan and I like him, and I like his work ethic, but because I think it is worth noting, Hoover was under pressure a lot more than he has been in any game this season, this weekend. And I think it showed, and he did a pretty good job of managing that pressure. Did he make some dumb throws off his back foot that could have been intercepted? Yeah. However, I think given the circumstances of how often he was pressured during this game, he did a pretty good job of managing that. I think that Utah definitely had a game plan of we're just going to send a bunch of people at him and we're going to make him beat us. And honestly, it kind of worked. I don't think our offensive line is as good enough in pass protection as they need to be. I also think that Cam Cook is not necessarily a great pass blocking running back. I've seen him whiff on a bunch of missed blocks. But all that to be said, I thought the offense did a good, not great job of moving the football. Obviously, we would like to see them score on the 3 drives that they had in the red zone in the first quarter. Hoover did a great job of spreading the ball around. I will give him that. Yeah. I mean, we had 5 guys with over 3 catches, and if you throw Eric McAllister in, who is our leading receiver with 57 yards and 2 catches, I mean, that's spreading the ball to a bunch of different guys who can hurt you. I think that one of my qualms with this game, and Connor's probably going to laugh because it was one of his favorite parts of this, but like, I don't personally like the idea of direct snaps. I think they're stupid. And the fact that we ran basically 7 direct snaps to Savion and like a couple to Cam Cook in this game is concerning to me, that we're relying on like Savion to just go be more athletic than the guy in front of you.
I think one, I don't like direct snapping to Cam Cook or to Haas Haney, who I recognize as a quarterback that's supposed to be direct snap to, but that doesn't need to happen either. But I agree that it was bad that we were constantly relying on Savion thing. I really like that being a new tool in our tool belt, though.
Yeah. And Bryles did a lot of the same stuff with Treylon Burks at Arkansas whenever he was there. Like, he used Treylon Burks exactly like he used Savion, where he's just moving him all around the field. That being said, like, there are better ways to get Savion the ball than just bringing him in the backfield and direct snapping it to him. I agree that, like, it's a nice wrinkle to have if you want to throw it in there every now and then, but it doesn't need to happen 7 times in a single game. Yeah,
I can get behind that stance.
And now that they've done it, teams will be prepared for it.
Yes.
But A couple things on this. I don't think they are trying to get the ball into Savion's hands. I think that is a perk. I think that they don't trust the running backs enough to actually hand the ball. And also, if we're relying on snapping it to Savion and him out athleticizing the person in front of him, he's going to do it 98% of the time. He's a freak.
Also, hold on. Everybody hear me out. They're watching the game tape. They're sitting at home. What's the name? Jerry Maguire from Texas. Joey Maguire is sitting there taking notes on the game. He's planning up. He's ready for Savion to do this. Can Savion pass the ball?
He was a high school quarterback.
That's what I'm thinking. So, first play of this next game, I want direct snap to Savion. Passes the ball to Besh for an 80-yard touchdown and an 80 passing yard touchdown from Savion Williams. Y'all heard it here first.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of my third point that I was getting to.
You were just there.
That was my next point, and you took it from me. I don't mind it. Seven times is a lot. It's a lot. Like, 3 to 4 tops. But I don't think it gained any fewer than, like, 4 or 5 yards.
Oh, no. He averaged, like, 10 yards a carry.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it works, I guess keep doing it.
I was saying call that play until they stop it.
I liked how they lined up Hoover next to Savion in the backfield, because that adds a whole other wrinkle, because they could snap it to Hoover instead. And Cam Cook was on the other side. So theoretically, and he took direct snaps as well this game. So theoretically, there's a lot you could. It's kind of just like the triple option, but off the snap rather than off the quarterback handing the ball off, which I never want to see TCU run an option play again with Josh Hoover, because I think it's happened twice now this season that he's fumbled it.
That is one thing that I want to touch on is, like, Kendall Briles, right? Historically, great offense and open field. We've really struggled in the red zone. It was the same story at Arkansas. One of his favorite plays is this read option play. And Josh Hoover has proven at this point that he can't run that play effectively.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious as to why Kendall Briles consistently continues to decide to run a read option in the red zone, knowing that Josh cannot run them. Yeah. Like, at the end of the day, if you're inside the 5 and it's first and goal, just run a straight run 3 times at that point, and you'll probably get in, and you don't run the risk of Josh not knowing whether to pull it out and then a fumble happening and losing the ball.
And you know what? 2 or 3 weeks ago, I get why we wouldn't do it, because we 3 straight runs, we couldn't get a yard. But Savion's new little BS, Trent Battle's incredible performance, we have a team that it's not the best running team in the Big 12 by any means, but you can count on them much more than you could 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say on the fumble, Hoover made the right call. He should have pulled it, and he did pull it. And actually, when he pulled it, he had complete control of the ball. It was as soon as he took a step that he just mishandled it or something like that, and it popped out. So he made the right call. I just don't trust him to hold on to the ball. And that's an issue when you're running a read option play.
Now, I will say, and if y'all have more you want to say about this, I won't transition yet, but I'm just thinking ahead. I criticized Hoover, saying he's getting worse week to week. We're talking about him not being able to be trusted with the ball. This next team we play has been doing fairly well until this weekend. But next week, we go up to a Texas Tech that has given up a combined total of something like 107 points to Abilene Christian and Baylor and no one else. Just those two alone put up over 100 points. This is not the strongest defense we're going to play. There is a lot of opportunity for us to figure some stuff out and for Josh Hoover, who has kind of been declining, to undo that decline.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't think Tech is all that good. I do think that they will have game planned for Kendall Briles. But before we move on to to Tech, I want to talk about our punter for a second, because he was fantastic this game. Thought the punting was incredible. He was just booming punts down the field. The coverage was also really good. And I'm a little bit disappointed in our kicking game still. But Ethan Craw has been really good all season, and somebody needs to recognize it. As a former all-world JV punter that I was in high school in 10th grade, I see you, Ethan Craw. You're doing good. Keep it up, man.
You know what? Here's the thing. You never like having to brag about your punter because it means you were in a position to have to brag about your punter.
Unless you're Iowa.
Well, yeah, that's its own whole world. But Ethan Craw has been doing – there were a couple punts that we just nailed them. Can Ethan Craw kick a field goal? Does anyone know?
Well, I mean – you can't.
I know they're different skills,
with the block. With the block, is that the kicker's fault, or is it the lineman's fault?
And I will say, Ceteris Paribus, it is not the kicker's fault. For those listening, Ceteris Paribus is a pretentious word that economists use for all other things being equal. However, all other things are not equal because there's one factor involved, and it was that Kyle Lemmerman even touched the field. So you know what? Until he gives me a reason, is his name not Kyle? Why are you laughing?
No, it is.
Okay. Until he gives me a reason to defend him, I'm not going to.
Yeah. I mean, I will say on a 25-yard field goal that he was kicking, he should not be kicking it low enough for them to get a hand up. He should be getting under the ball and popping it up so they can't block it. So in that aspect, it's on him. But like, honestly, yes. It's mostly on the offensive line. But enough about that. I just wanted to give Ethan Craw a shout out. Let's turn to Tech.
So to start us off, I'll kind of run through some of the numbers here. Texas Tech as a team is a tale of two halves. Their offense, top 20 in the nation, number 17 in points per game. This Zach Kittley offense is moving and grooving. They throw the ball a lot, but with Taj Brooks in the backfield, they're really efficient when they do run the ball. The defense, not so much. 110th in opponent points per game, 114th in opponent yards per game. So, like Connor said, this defense is definitely beatable. I fully expect Josh Hoover to come in and absolutely dice up this defense. It's going to be a matter of whether or not we can stop the offense, in all honesty.
And my real concern, our defense looked good this week, but when I was planning on transitioning in with my comment about the defense, my flip side of the coin was going to be the Taj Brooks of it all. I'm very concerned that Taj Brooks is going to just devour us.
Yep. I will say, though, in the past when we've been worried about running backs, it's been R.J. Harvey for UCF. And to my recollection, we stuffed R.J. Harvey for the majority of the game. He had a really good game. But against Kansas, when we were really worried about the run game, they didn't run the ball on us. And I'm pretty sure that most of R.J. Harvey's yards came in the second half. So it was after we stopped actually pressuring and putting any...
It was in that point during the UCF game when we thought, who wants to play football?
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. Like, there have been times this year when we've been hurt by the run. And then there have been times like yesterday where their top running back, Micah Bernard, had 55 yards. And he was on – he's basically on pace to match Taj Brooks' output for this year before yesterday. And then he ran for 55 yards yesterday. He did not – well, we stuffed him. And he's a good running back. Granted, we didn't really have to worry about them throwing the ball. But still, we can stop the run. It's just a matter of what team shows up.
Well, and here's the issue with this Tech offense, right? Is Tech is a pass-first offense. They pass the ball 55% of the time, which is 24th in the country. They only run the ball the other 45%, which is 111th in the country. However, they are number 28 in yards per rush at averaging 5 yards per rush. And so they're super efficient when they do run the ball. If you look at Taj Brooks' numbers, he has more yards on his own than the entire TCU offense does rushing. And which is...
That's because Thavion just started.
but this offense that Zach Kittley runs, it's predicated on one, speed. They run a no huddle offense, and they're going to wear our guys down, and they're going to find some holes because our guys are not going to get set. Like, that's going to be inevitable. But two, it's really predicated on getting the ball out quickly. They're 90th in country in yards per pass at just 6.8 yards. But they throw 41 passes a game, which is 12th in the country. And so I am worried about, one, us being able to get pressure because they just move the ball so quickly out of Barrett Morton's hands. But more specifically, I'm worried about our corners, to Travis Broughton, even more specifically, of, like, can they play physical enough to get guys off of their line and force Barron Morton to hold on to the ball a little bit longer without drawing flags.
Yeah, I mean, I think that last part is key, because I'm not particularly too worried about Travis Broughton being physical. He's shown many times during personal fouls that he is plenty physical.
The question is, can he be physical at the times that matter?
Yeah. And as to the speed thing, I'm not particularly worried about that, because it's what our defense goes up every day against every day in practice. You know, we run a fast offense as well. We a lot of the time we run a no huddle offense. We've had to implement the huddle because we're going too quickly sometimes. But I don't think that'll be too much of an issue. I'm just looking over Tech's schedule, and I think that they were a really fluky 5-1 before playing Baylor. Because you look at them, 51-52 Abilene Christian, one score game. They lose to Washington.
51 to Abilene Christian. I recognize that's not how the game works, but that's a loss.
Well, then they get beat by 20 by Washington State, and then they destroyed North Texas, which I don't think anybody was expecting them to do.
I think everyone who's watched Chandler Morris was expecting that.
Well, up until that point, Chandler had played really well.
I've heard that before.
But then they played Arizona State. They won 30-22, which is a one-score game. They beat Cincinnati 44-41, one-score game. They beat Arizona 28-22, one-score game. And then they get blown out of the water by Baylor. Every single one of their wins, bar North Texas, was a one-score game.
Well, and not to mention the fact that these weren't one-score games over BYU or Iowa State, the obvious powerhouses of the Big 12 that we all expected this year. But they're one-score games against teams, like, they're teams that would give us a hard time. I'm not going to say that we're definitely going to beat Cincy, But like,
I will.
Okay. Well,
we're going we're going 9-3.
Well, I forgot about that. We are going 9-3. I forgot that's on the table. But the truth of the matter is, they are getting squeak wins over not necessarily powerhouse teams that are not necessarily that much better than TCU. Like,
yeah,
and they're barely getting them over. And quite frankly, they got clobbered by Baylor, who I can say pretty comfortably is worse than TCU by a lot.
Yeah, but it could have been the classic, they were looking forward to us, so they just discounted Baylor. I mean, that's what Texas ran into this week. They were just looking too far ahead because they have Vandy next week. And so they were like, oh, we'll beat Georgia really easily. We got Vandy. We can't lose to Vandy. So, I mean, I will say that's a thing. But then again, Baylor's also a rivalry for them. That's the Butt Bowl. So, yeah. I expect our guys to come out with some fire next week because it's homecoming. So you have that aspect added onto it. Our fans will show out. It's not a night game, and we are undefeated in non-night games this year. So,
well, and you have forgotten the most important factor because you didn't have this evidence yet. But there's one last statistic that we all need to know. 1 year ago, I said on this podcast that I was going to stand in the front row of the Texas Tech student section and make sure we win this game. And 1 year ago, I stood in the front of the Texas Tech student section and I was bullied violently by people with tortillas when we lost a game. I've bought my plane ticket. I've bought my ticket to the game. And I am coming to have my vengeance on the Cactus people. I cannot go down with that being my last appearance against Texas Tech. And I personally will stop Taj Brooks if I have to. Not only will our fans show out, our fan will show out. I will be there and I will carry this team on my shoulders to run this through Lubbock.
All right, so you guys heard it here. Connor will stop Taj Brooks by himself. So our intro
off the field, I will find you, Taj Brooks.
Our intro next week is going to be Connor streaking the field on a Taj Brooks long run and taking him out at the 5-yard line.
Look, y'all laugh. But when Taj Brooks has to sit out the rest of the game because I took out his ankle after streaking across the field, you'll be thanking me. My fiance just requested that I please don't, and this is why women shouldn't be allowed to vote.
God.
Well, Barrett, you have any thoughts about next week?
No, I mean, I think this is going to be strength versus weakness on both sides. I fully expect this game to be an absolute shootout.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, what's the line?
I'm pulling up the line right now if it's out. I was saying to someone yesterday that I expect this game to look a lot like the 2015 TCU Texas Tech game. The only difference is that it won't be remembered the way that Trayvon Boykin and Pat Mahomes were remembered. But it's going to be a similar score line, even though it won't be similar talent.
Yeah.
You guys heard it here. We are running out of fireworks.
No, that was 2014.
Well, we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, you're right. You heard it.
We're running out of fireworks.
Look, I wouldn't be shocked if we ran out of fireworks. It's just the reality that they might also have put up 80 points. It'll still be a nail biter.
Over under 66 and a half is what I'm seeing.
I take that over.
100%.
I think so, yeah.
What's the spread?
TCU by 5.5.
I'm okay with that.
We have a 60% chance on ESPN
I think 60% chance to win in one possession is actually a very accurate description of what's going to look like.
I'm taking the over on both of those. Frogs by 90.
Okay, that's what I like to hear.
I like it. I like it.
Well, and Jacob did say it. We haven't really mentioned it, but I returned to Twitter very briefly, and I saw that the entirety of TCU has committed to believing that we're going 9-3. And it's not impossible.
No, our schedule is not that difficult, especially with Oklahoma State forgetting that football is a sport.
Well, when I saw all of that hype about 9-3, I was like, oh, it's just, you know, the TCU burners having a good time. Why not?
It could happen.
But Tech, Baylor, and Cincy are three games that I feel are very winnable for us.
Tech at home, definitely winnable. Baylor away, I mean, Sawyer Robinson looked good against Tech. He did.
I still feel pretty comfortable we send Baylor packing. Here's the thing. Sonny is not getting fired this year. But people have talked a lot of game about Sonny this year, and sending Baylor packing is big job security.
Oh, massive job security. But then the two teams that I would be worried about, Oklahoma State and Arizona, are both at home.
They're both at home, and they've both turned out to be less than we thought they'd be at the beginning. Actually, Oklahoma State has remained exactly what I predicted, because week one, when we reviewed our whole thing for the semester, I said that Oklahoma State is an enigma and no one can understand what they will choose to do at any given moment. And Oklahoma State lived up exactly to my expectations.
Yeah, one thing they haven't chosen to do is run the ball with Ollie Gordon.
It's an odd choice. I don't know why Oklahoma State would pick that odd choice, but only Mike Gundy can understand the inner workings of Oklahoma State.
There's an account on Twitter who's keeping track of Oklahoma State and Utah's records, because they, at the beginning of the year, those were the two teams.
Yeah.
And since they have played each other, it's tweeted like 7 or 8 times, but 6 of those tweets is Oklahoma State and Utah are combined 0-1 since playing each other. Oklahoma State and Utah are now a combined 0-2 since playing each other. And it goes on to yesterday after we played, I saw Oklahoma State and Utah are now a combined 0-6 since playing each other. So,
Oklahoma State's fallen off a lot from what we expected, and we play them at home. It's not impossible. And I recognize this is the team. This is the – if our preseason projection of 10-2 – ends up off by 1 on the flukiest of end season runs, we deserve a trophy. Not the Frogs, the three wise men. Like this, but we should have trophies made for ourselves.
I think Barrett actually had us at 9-3.
I think he did.
Yeah.
I did.
Oh. Yeah, I think Connor, you and I were the optimists.
Yeah. But all of us said we sound pretty purple tinted glasses. And we've turned out to be a lot worse than we thought we were at the time.
Yep.
But despite that, I don't see a world that we don't get a bowl game. Like, we're not as bad as I thought we were at our worst. Barrett, did you just say I do?
Yes, there's definite possibility that we don't get a bowl game.
I think between Tech, Baylor, and Cincy, we take 2. I don't think we don't take 2 of those 3.
I think between Oklahoma State and Arizona, we take 1.
Yeah.
So we would only need to take 1 of those 3.
And I think we easily take 1 of those 3.
We can win 2 out of the last 5 games. Like that, yeah, we should do that. Come on.
I don't see us going 1-4 in these last few weeks.
The only problem is now that we've lost 2 Big 12 games, I don't think we're in the running for the Big 12 championship anymore.
The announcers were saying we are. We're not. I don't consider this a Big 12 championship season at all.
No.
But I'm saying I don't see us not getting a bowl game. I just don't.
I agree.
I think there's a distinct probability that we get a bowl game. I'll say that.
You saying it either will happen or it won't, Barrett?
The funniest thing about this is that when we talk about the details of the game, Jacob and I are constantly like, we suck at this, we suck at this, we suck at this. And Barrett's like, well, in their defense, this, in their defense, this, in their defense, this. And then in the grand scheme, Jacob and I are like, we suck at everything and we're going to win all five games. Barrett's like, we're actually pretty good at everything and we're winning one, maybe.
I'm forever, just forever the realist.
All right, well, I didn't make picks for this week. I didn't put a I didn't actually fill out our old mystery games, but I did go to the Special Olympics flag football and watch three games to be mystery games that we can draw from if needed. If it's not inappropriate to use Special Olympics flag football as our mystery games. But it was some of the best football I've ever watched.
Well, I mean, nobody is policing us, so like,
that's what I was watching. It was spectacular.
Yeah.
I think my favorite part was that they had this 1'6" black kid who definitely had no disabilities of any kind. And he was running all over the field.
Brings me back to my intramural days, TCU, you know.
Back when Jacob was a 6'2 black kid.
Gosh, y'all are too much.
Yeah, well, I mean, we don't need to do picks this week. We're already 50 minutes in or so. But yeah, this was a good week. I think we need to enjoy it while we can.
You know what? I think that's the best take I've heard. This was an ugly game. There were disappointments, but we've had some ugly games that ended with losses a lot lately. And you're exact. We should just take the win. Everybody go enjoy it. Go take a drive and pee in the Great Salt Lake. And then just call it a day. Like we all did good.
Yeah.
Roll toad.
Roll toad. Anything else? Roll toad.
No, I think that's it.
All right. Well, thanks y'all for listening to your favorite podcast with your three favorite geniuses giving their not so genius takes on all things TCU football and maybe a few things interesting going around the country. I don't know if we talked about much else, but thank y'all for tuning in. Subscribe wherever you're listening, like this wherever you're listening, and go Frogs.
Go Frogs.